pleasure to introduce to you Sammy from Olympia, Washington.
I'm Sammy Mavalik. I'm grateful to be here, I'm grateful to be sober today. First off, I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me to come out here. It's a really great honor. I'd like to thank Amber for coordinating with me and Brandon for getting me out here, and Barb for coordinating my plane ticket, and for Liz for being one of the funniest hosts I've ever had. I've just had a great time being here in Arizona. I knew it was gonna be hot, but I wasn't expecting it to be this hot. It's cool, a new experience. I don't know about y'all, but sobriety countdown, I always start like tearing up, you know. I don't know, it's like watching the miracle of this program happen, like in front of my eyes, you know. So my sobriety date is November 9, 2009. Group. It's the Capital City Group in Olympia, Washington. We meet every Mondays and Thursdays. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and my sponsor is actually here, which is fucking awesome. And you know, I'm grateful in my life that I'm grateful that I have people in my life who are like, yeah, like, let's go to this conference, you know? My sponsor's never been to a YPOC conference, so give them a lot of shit. All I hope is that I can be useful to somebody and share something that maybe keeps you around another day. My story is really weird. I'm not very good at being linear, but bear with me because I'm sure it's gonna be a wild ride for both of us. I guess I'll talk about what it was like a little bit. It's like so wild because like I have so many, like I relate to so much of what was already said. I come from a somewhat dysfunctional family. I mean, we always had everything that we needed, but you know, well, when I was like 13, 14, my dad went to jail for child abuse. There was a lot of like fucked up shit that was happening. And I started living on the streets pretty young. My dad was in the military, we moved around a lot. Well, we didn't move around a lot, but I actually grew up in Central Texas. Shout out to all the folks from Texas. I spent most of my childhood in Killeen, Fort Hood. And then my dad retired and moved us up to the Northwest because, I don't actually know why, but that's where we ended up. And I've kind of been there ever since. And you know, like my parents, you know, my parents were not alcoholics and addicts. I mean, my dad might have been a dry drunk or whatnot, but like I saw my parents drink maybe a handful of times in my lifetime. And you know, they did the best that they could. You know, sometimes it wasn't always enough, but you know, they really tried their best. When I was 15, I had all this turmoil, and my dad found out I was queer and told me not in his house. So I was kicked out at an early age and started living on the streets. And I had maybe like drank or smoked pot like a handful of times. I wasn't really like into it, but when you're 15 and homeless and don't really have anything else to do, it's like kind of like a party every day. And everybody I hung out with, that's what they did. They just drank and used drugs. My disease progressed pretty quickly. When you're homeless and get fucked up all the time, I mean, you're in and out of institutions, that's kind of how it is. Like, the cops see you and they stop you and you go to jail. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit nervous. So I have to disclose something for kind of my story to make sense. So I'm a transgender alcoholic. And for those of you that don't know what that means, is that I was born female, and so a lot of my story, you gotta think of me as a little girl. It might be kind of weird, but because that was my experience. And so like I'm a young woman on the streets. I was a baby dyke, you know, and like. And you know, and I had to be tough to like survive, you know. And so I was mean, and I didn't trust people, and I had a lot of experiences to tell me why. I had a lot of horrific experiences on the streets, and what I learned at an early age is that trust nobody and everybody leaves, you know. And so it was really hard for me to get to connect with people. But I remember drinking and drugs, the thing that, you know, I grew up as a weirdo, I was a nerd, I was a loner, and I never felt like I fit in. And I remember, like, the first time I ever got loaded, it was like all of that went away. I felt okay in the world, and there was a possibility that I might belong, you know? And it made it easy for me to connect with other people. You know, I was able to connect with people, other people on the streets. I had like a mouthpiece. I can like talk my way into any heart, you know, and I would talk my way out of horrible situations, or like I talked my way out of handcuffs or like other things. And I just thought I was like the shit. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And so I did a lot of hitchhiking around. I was like one of those kids, like the gutter punk with the butt flaps and like the dirty dogs and haven't bathed in 6 months. And I hitchhiked around. And I'd get locked up, they'd send me back to Washington, I'd leave, get locked up again, get sent back. And eventually, when I turned 18 and I went to prison my first time for a robbery. And you know, I'm like, I'm 18, they send me to women's prisons, and I didn't have to wait to get out to get laid. I had a lot of fun in there. But I totally relate to,
that's
like...
That's fucked up.
But I totally relate to this idea of, like, you know, it's like I live my life without the road, without the guides, you know. But in prison, I intuitively knew how to handle situations. And it was, like, the one place I felt comfortable. Because I knew how to get power, and I knew how to get respect, you know. And I knew what I needed to do to get what I wanted, you know. And so I went to prison. And when I got out, I got into this transitional living program, and I couldn't stay sober. You know, I had every intention. I was like, as long as I stop shooting heroin, I'll be okay. If I could just drink and smoke weed, and that did not last very long. I thought that, like, I don't know, I thought I could control it, you know, like all of us do. I just thought I could, like, I don't know, wrestle like happiness out of life or like whatever. But you know, there came a point where like I remember my mom had picked me up. I was strung out again, and you know, I was trying to get 20 bucks from her, and she took me to Taco Bell and just wouldn't give me any money. And I jumped out of her moving car, and she came to my apartment, and I'm throwing like Taco Bell burritos from a second story balcony at her, like, go away, you know, like give me money or leave, you know. And it's funny now, it was not funny at the time. And it was just like, what am I doing, you know? And I remember I hit this point where it's just like, this is what my life is gonna be like, you know? This is what my life is gonna be like. I remember my transitional living program was gonna kick me out, and I couldn't stop staying. You know, I kept getting, my probation kept getting violated, and for the first time in my life, they were like, they realized at some point that I'd never been to treatment. Like, nobody had ever offered me treatment, and my transitional living program offered to send me to treatment. And I was 20 years old, never had taken a legal drink. They sent me off to treatment, and in treatment what I learned was to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when I got out, I started going, and it was really cool, because like I was like definitely the youngest person, but there was people like within 5 years of my age, and it was like people swooped me up, and we did a lot of fun things, and we didn't have YPAW. But we would have like conventions where there'd be dancing, and like I had a group of young people that just took me to do things. And I remember I got swooped up by these older lesbians. I don't know, I just had like a wild time. And all these older lesbians in my town kind of swooped me up, you know, because I was a baby lesbian. And and they just did things. Like, I remember if like I was celebrating 9 months, and I was like at these, I had like these older lesbians had started letting me live with them, you know, and I was like part of their family, and they brought me out a 9 month cake, and like it was cool, you know. It was like people cared about me, you know. People cared about, and before that, you know, I mean, I had my parents. They did the best they could, but they just couldn't show up for me the way that people in AA showed up for me. And so, you know, I'm doing the thing. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I work all 12 steps. My fourth step, there I had one thing. I had one thing that I just didn't think I could share with my sponsor. And I was honest about it. My sponsor knew that there was something out of my list, you know, and made it really clear that this was something that I was going to have to share with somebody. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll find somebody, you know, and I never did that. And then there's a lot of other, you know, there's a lot of other reasons. I started, you know, I got a job working on Mount Rainier, and I'd be in the mountains for 8 days, and I'd be in town for 6 days, and I didn't really want to go to meetings the 6 days I was in town. I wanted to hang out with people. And I had almost 2 years of sobriety, and I turned 21 in sobriety. I got really obsessed with the bars, you know, because again, it's like I'm connecting with people, but I'm struggling to connect with people my age. I'm struggling to feel like I fit in. And so what do you do when you're 21? You go to the bar, you know? And I started hanging out at the bar, at first with sober people. We'd have groups of sober people, and we'd go dancing and doing all that stuff. And eventually I just started going by myself, you know? Started going playing pool with people, doing this and doing that. And one day, it just seemed like the right thing to do, to like have a beer, you know? And I had a beer, checked in with my probation, and came back and continued to get drunk, you know? And it's wild how, like, you know, people say that we're not a cult, but we definitely are a cult. Because this program had rewired the way that I had thought. And so, like, even before I drank, I don't even know why, but for some reason I had called a couple people from the program and nobody had answered. And so, like, you know, I drink, I get drunk, and when I'm, like, I get to this point where I'm drunk and these people who I had called earlier had started calling me back, and I answer the phone drunk, and they're like, oh, you're drunk, Sammy. And they're like, do you want to go to a meeting? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So they come to the bar and pick me up. But by that time, it was like the allergy of the mind, you know? And it was like, you know? They sobered me up. They took me to a meeting. But like that night, I went back down, got drunk. You know, within a couple days, I'm like doing other substances. And, you know, within a year, I'm back in prison. This time around, it's like that whole thing of like head full of AA, you know, head full of AA. And I was like, I remember I'd be like loaded and I'd see AA people downtown. And it just sucked. It sucked so much. And also, I want to say too, if you've never, I wouldn't suggest it, but if you have to absolutely try it, like, it's a cool experience. But when I relapsed, I had registered for Icky Paul when it was in San Francisco. I think it was 2007. And we went, I got loaded all the way down. I was at the conference, loaded the whole time. And I remember, you know, this is why I think like four steps are super important, because I remember there's having a pool party and everybody's so happy around me, and I hate everybody. I'm miserable. I just like do not want to be there, but I'm stuck there, and because I didn't have a driver's license, I didn't drive. And I remember I called some folks back at home because like this thing that I couldn't share my four step was like eating me alive, you know? And I just like, I don't know. I honestly thought that I'd never be able to get sober again, you know, because I don't know, this is like the pain, you know, the pain in sobriety. And what I realized is that, like, you know, the pain that I had in sobriety was just like untreated alcoholism. It's because, like, I couldn't get honest with myself and with another person, you know? And that's a big part of my story, is like being honest with myself and with other people. You know, I think a lot of stuff too is like, I knew at the time, the first time I was sober, I knew I had like identity issues. Like, I knew that I just didn't fit right in myself, you know, in a lot of different ways, not only with like untreated alcoholism, but like with my gender identity and different stuff. But I just didn't, you know, when I first came to AA, I already felt so different than everybody else. I didn't want to add something else that was going to make me more different, you know? So I just like pushed a lot of stuff that I needed to deal with in like the back burner, you know? I just like pushed it back because I didn't want to deal with it, I couldn't deal with it, whatever the reason. So I go back to prison. This time around, I have like a community of people in AA who love me, you know? So I got people writing me, you know? I have a sponsor who's visiting me. I'm like working the steps through the mail, and I just like cannot, you know? Even in prison, like I couldn't get more than a couple months sober at a time, and I kept relapsing and relapsing and relapsing. And when I got out, my mom came and picked me up from prison, and my sponsor came with her, and they took me out to eat. My sponsor took me to a meeting right away, you know? And I go home, and I'm unpacking all my stuff, like there's some drugs in my stuff, and like I got loaded one last time, and I just remember that like the loneliness and like despair of being like, I'm never gonna get this. Like I'm never gonna get this. I'm always gonna fuck up, I'm always gonna get loaded, and just like like the emptiness and like the pain, you know? It's like one of the most terrifying moments of my life, of being like, fuck, I'm fucked, you know? And the next day, you know, the next day I called my sponsor and I got really honest. Like, I think it was the first time in my life that I got 100% honest with somebody. My sponsor came over and we got rid of everything I had left. And I haven't had a drink or use since that day. And I can't say that, like, I mean, the steps are a magical formula, but like, I've seen people work the steps, and I've seen people get drunk, and I've seen people not work the steps and stay sober, and so it's like, I don't know what the magic solution is, you know, because let me tell you, I'm the poster child for what not to do in AA, you know, I've done a lot of stuff that was suggested not to do, and somehow I've miraculously been able to stay sober. It's really amazing to be here today because the last six months of my life have been like some of the hardest ever. And like, I might start crying, so bear with me. You know, I'm coming up on 10 years and like, I remember, thanks.
Congratulations on 9 years, bro.
Thanks. And, you know, people have that whole thing of people go out between 5 and 7 and all this. So like, we all have these spiritual bombs. And I had one at 5 years. At 5 years sober, I had like the job, the house, the girlfriend, the car, you know, and I got really sick in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got really, my disease like popped up really hard and like, one by one, my character defects got really bad, and one by one, I like lost each of those things. You know, I lost the girl, I lost the car, lost the house. And I remember there's a point where like, and the only thing God has done for me perfectly is like remove the desire to drink, like the obsession to drink. Right? The rest of all my other character defects have been a slow process. And I remember I was like, I ended up driving into one of my friend's houses at 2:30 in the morning because I was gonna kill myself. I was like, we need to check me into the mental hospital because I seriously think I'm gonna kill myself. And she suggested we go to the casino first and see how I felt afterwards. And it worked, you know, but it did. I felt better. I wouldn't suggest that, but you know, there came a point where like everything I'd been using to make myself feel good, like my image, you know, sex, money, you know, all these things, everything I'd been using to make myself feel better stopped working. And no matter how many meetings I went to, I just couldn't feel okay, you know? And like, that's like untreated alcoholism right there. It's like, and at first I thought that, you know, when my life fell apart at 5 years, I was like, oh, this is just, everybody has this, you know? And recently my life got really hard again. And I was just like, oh, it's like, my ego is rebuilding, you know, it's like people say, you know, what people say, our disease is in the background doing push-ups, you know, it's because our ego is, my ego is myself, my ego knows me better than I know myself, and like, it's like the queen said yesterday, you know, it's like, I got blessings, you know, the hardship comes up and I have blessings around the corner, but my disease doesn't want me to get there, you know, so like, yeah, it's like, don't quit before the miracle happens. So I want to talk about my identity stuff, but I want to talk about the stuff that recently happened because, you know, like, I've been kind of like, I'd gotten a new sponsor and I was working the steps again and like, I don't know how or why the ego rebuilds itself, but like, I hit this point, you know, and it's like, I like to make relationships my higher power. Yeah. And it doesn't work very well. And like, I've struggled my sobriety with like the concept of God, you know? Because when I think of God, I think of Sky Dad or like the crucifix that's gonna get me. Sky Dad in the sky with his white beard. And those conceptions don't work for me. And I struggled, you know, I was like, I'm an atheist, I'm an agnostic, you know? But like, you know, and I got a sponsor that was just like, we gotta look at this, you know, because you're either gonna grow spiritually or you're gonna die, you know? And like, I don't know. I'm a nerd, so I'm like, how could there not be a god? Like, fractals exist in nature. Like, what the fuck is with that? I don't know if any of y'all know what fractals are. It's like a math thing. So I had a lot of work to do around God, you know? And what I realized is, I didn't trust God because I had fucked up experiences in my life, you know? I remember being younger and praying and being like, God, please save me from this situation, you know? And then I'd wake up the next day in that home or on the streets or whatever. And I didn't trust anybody and I didn't trust God, you know? And how can I believe in something like that, you know? How can I believe? And I don't know, it's like, I look at my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I even look at my experiences that have brought me to where I am today, and it's like a trip, you know? It's like, they tell you to wait a year before you make any big changes, you know? So I waited until I had about a year and a month, and I started medically transitioning to become male. And it was probably one of the hardest experiences in my life because people were supportive, but people also said really fucked up and shitty things to me, and I had shitty experiences, you know? And there was a long period of time where I didn't know if I was gonna stay in Alcoholics Anonymous or leave, you know? Because I just didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel welcomed. And what I was told to do was to get involved in service. And thank God for service, because it gave me something to do. So, and people in general service, it's like a different, whole different trip, you know? Because it gets me out of myself, because I get to help somebody else. And so I transition, I get involved in service, and then all of these wild things start happening where I start connecting with people, I start feeling like I belong. And I've had and this is it ties into my God stuff, is I remember there was this moment, I went to the International Convention in Atlanta, and I remember being there, and I was going all the gay and lesbian stuff, I was doing all the LGBT stuff, and I just felt so, there's 30,000 fucking alcoholics, and I feel so alone, nobody else understands me, I'm so unique. And I'm sitting outside my hotel room at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's a woman there who's there for the conference too, and I'm I can't seem to connect with people, I don't, you know, I am struggling, I can't, I want to find other transgender people, blah, 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 you know, and I'm having a hard time. And she turns and looks at me, and she comes out, and she's transgender herself, you know. It's like God shot right there, you know? 3 o'clock in the morning, the one person I run into is another transgender alcoholic. And the next day we get to have a meeting with transgender alcoholics from all over the United States. It's mind blowing, you know? And it's I have these situations where it's that whole phrase, is it odd or is it God, you know? And for a long time it was just oh, that's coincidence, you know? It was just my ego being well, if I admit that there's a God, then I have to admit that I was wrong. You know, the last whatever 20 years of my life that I was wrong about this. But the cool thing is when I get in enough pain, it pushes me to actually not give a fuck about how I look, you know? So my life got really hard, and I became willing to have a new idea about things. That maybe there is a possibility that there's a God. Maybe there is a possibility that that it's my thinking that's making me separate and not the people that are around me, you know? And that was probably one of the hardest experiences that I had, because it's so much easier to blame the people around you than take responsibility for your own thinking, you know? And I had to start doing a lot of work in Alcoholics Anonymous to change that, you know? And today it's my sponsor tells me all the time that God is contemplative and self-will is reactionary, right? And that's my hardest thing for me to do, is to pause long enough to not react to things. Because I have a feeling or I have an idea, and I think that it's true and I think it's right, and that's what I do, I just jump on it. So 6 months ago, my life fell apart. I was dating somebody. We were both suffering from untreated alcoholism. We both made each other our higher powers. He had 3 years, I had nine years. And he drank, and I poured gasoline all over. I didn't pour gasoline all over myself because he drank, but you know, I had this situation where I felt out of control, and my first reaction was to light myself on fire, you know. And I'm not 9 years sober, you know. And in that same week, I kicked the door in, you know. I was absolutely insane, you know. And it reminds me that You know, it's like, it's an everyday, like, I have to work on myself spiritually every day, or that, like, I'm still that sick and suffering alcoholic, you know? And I remember, like, I was, like, I poured gasoline on myself, and then within, like, probably 15 minutes, my phone is ringing off the hook, you know, because, like, my ex is, like, is calling people, calling my sponsor, and then my friends, and then people are coming over, you know, and I didn't know that when gasoline's on your, like, sensitive areas of your body, it burns really bad, even if you don't light it on fire, you know, and, like, I got to, like, get cleaned up, I don't know, it's like I was in so much emotional pain, and I remember like talking to my sponsor about it, you know, and like having to like walk away, you know, having to walk away from the relationship, and I don't know, it's like, you know, today like drinking isn't my problem, it's my thinking, you know, and like me and my sponsor on this kick of like, what am I wrong about today? It's like that, I don't know who the speaker is, but uncovered, discovered, discarded, you know? And I'm on this process of like, what am I wrong about, you know? So, cause like, what, you know, like I'm suffering from untreated alcoholism, and what does that look like? I'm having trouble with my personal relationships. I can't control my emotional nature, so I have a feeling and I lash out, or I do something insane. I'm a prey to misery and depression. I can't make a living. I have a feeling of uselessness. I'm full of fear, you know? And like, I was living my life full of fear, and I had to get back into step work and like change some stuff in my life and get, and how much time do I have?
10 minutes.
Half hour? 10 minutes. So yeah, so it's like, you know, and like today, and I wanna say that like I beat myself up because I think like, oh, I'm not doing this right, you know? And like the reality of it is I haven't drank or like used, you know, so I must be doing something right, you know? And like I said, it's like the only thing God has removed from me perfectly is like my desire to drink, you know? My desire to drink, the obsession to drink, it's like I haven't drank in a long time, but that doesn't mean that like my character defects aren't gonna like come up. And I love it. I've been listening to a lot of speaker tapes. It's been really helpful. I love it. What is it? Sharon B talks about being 10 years sober and like, her like husband had an affair and like was hanging out with a new girl, and like she had 2 cups of hot coffee and like she's like gonna throw it on both of them, you know, 10 years sober. And I like relate to that, you know, because we have like this misconception that we get sober and we get time and suddenly like everything's okay, we're perfect, like yeah. And like the reality of it is like we keep uncovering new fucking shit that we have to like deal with, you know. And, yeah, you know. And when I, you know, when I got sober, I thought that if I just stayed sober long enough, that like, I'd be okay. Like things would be different, you know? And things are different, but it's taken a lot of work. I love it because it's, you know, in like step 6 of the 12 and 12, it talks about the riddle of our existence, you know? It's like having been granted a perfect release from alcoholism, then why shouldn't we be able to achieve by the same means a perfect release from every other difficulty or defect? This is the riddle of our existence, the full answer to which may be only in the mind of God. And in that phrase, it's talking about how like God gets to remove our alcoholism, but the rest of it we get to struggle with, you know? And one of my favorite speakers says that he thinks that we get to struggle with it because it makes, when we achieve that next level of like awakening, it makes it that much sweeter because of all the shit that we had to crawl through to get there, you know? And I love it because, you know, people say don't quit before the miracle happens. And sometimes that means that like we have to survive ourselves, that we have to not kill ourselves, you know, and not drink. And like, and sometimes that means that like for me, it's like people had to babysit me. I remember my best friend Aileen, I'd be driving home on the freeway and I would call her and I'd be like, will you just stay on the phone with me? Because I don't know if I'm gonna like turn my car into a semi truck, you know? And it's like people in this program understand that. I was at a meeting at our Alana Club and I was in the midst of all this pain and I'm sharing about like this is like stuff that it's like within a week of me doing all this crazy insane shit. And there's this woman there, Lisa, who like when I relapsed, Lisa came to like kick all these drunk people out of my house, and I like came home blacked out trying to fight her, and she just like pushed me on my bed. So she's seen me like drunk, sober, like drunk and sober and insane. And she was at this meeting and I'm sharing about the stuff, I'm sharing about how I like poured gas on myself and I kicked in the store, and she's just looking at me, she's just like, yeah, you know? Because I think that, you know, I think that sometimes, like, I'm afraid to get really honest about what's going on in my life. You know, I want to talk about how things are good with me, or, like, how, like, all of this stuff is, you know, I want to come up here and be like, yeah, like, my story is in the AA pamphlet, and, like, I got to speak at this conference, and blah, 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 and all this stuff, and talk myself up. But the reality of it is, like, sometimes shit is hard, and sometimes I'm messy, you know? And sometimes, like, it doesn't look perfect, and that's okay. Like, all I have to do is not drink today and, like, try to do it better tomorrow, you know? That's all it is. That's all this program is about. It's about not drinking today and trying to do it a little bit better tomorrow, you know? And as long as I don't take that first drink, I get that opportunity to try again tomorrow, you know? And I get to share with people. I love it because, like, you know, like, really, for me, really big pain creates a really big change, right? And the messier I am in sobriety, I feel like the more helpful I can be to other people who, you know, have a mess themselves. And it's like a testament to how this program works, where I'm gonna, like, be crazy and pour gas on myself and not drink, you know? And, like, I'm gonna be here today, you know, in Arizona, and, like, share my story, you know? I think that's about all I have. I hope I was helpful, so thanks for letting me be here.